What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
I think the Patriots, because I've seen Belichick lose too many name brand players. Not just like name brand players we see in the NFL, they're name brands, but in name only. They don't really do it anymore. We've seen him, you know, we've seen prime time players in the primes of their careers plucked off that defense. And the next year, it's like they haven't missed a step.
Is something wrong?
No. Everything's cool right now. Might be some problems later, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
You lose too many of those people, like Dante, and like obviously on the offensive side of the ball, you lose a Tom Brady. It's going to have an effect on your football team that you can't really measure, that you can't really put your finger on and touch.
It was unbelievable. We could totally be ourselves. We didn't have to play any games.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Cam Newton couldn't have scripted a better start to his Patriots career. He's ready to go. He has been working out and working out with Patriots players, Patriots personnel. He's been working out with Julian Edelman. He's been getting the young guys involved.
Look at my man. Hold on. Wait here. Look at my man right there, man.
Yes, he's done and said the right things, at least that we've seen publicly. We've seen other guys do that. It's not a big deal until we find out whether or not you can produce.
Oh, yes. I'm going to enjoy this. Well, I'm still going to enjoy this. Definitely not as much. That makes me angry.
Now, it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, welcome into the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI. Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen here in Providence. Ben, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark.
Well, sports are back, so that's the good news. I'm ecstatic. I can't wait for all these playoff scenarios to unfold. I'm ecstatic. I love to see the sports. You know, I wish some of the things that I've watched went a little bit more the way I was hoping they would go. I'll say it that way. As of right now, I feel pretty spot on with my prognostication of the Boston Red Sox. I can't say I'm shocked. So I have a bunch of different thoughts. Do you have an opening take?
Well, I want to start with the Celtics game from last night.
I am too. You can go first.
We finally get to see the Celtics in action, in real action, not that BS scrimmage stuff.
Yep.
And man, that was a frustrating game. An unbelievably frustrating game, a game they should have won, and the refs are not the reason they lost that game. Even though the officiating was terrible, and there were some really bad moments in it.
Correct.
Jason Tatum is the reason they lost that game. That's it. That he is the reason they lost that game. 2-for-18 from the field.
And one of those two, I mean, was that even a real basket, honestly? I mean, they tipped it in. The Bucks tipped it in. Yeah. They credited Tatum because he was the closest guy there.
Yeah. So it was that was a brutal game to watch. There was some interesting nuggets you could take out of it that as I'm watching it, I'm going, oh, Mark's going to be annoyed with this. When they go small, when they go real small, they actually were doing well when they went really small. They clawed back into that game in the second quarter when they went small, and Grant Williams is your biggest big out there. I didn't love it at times. They didn't take advantage when Giannis wasn't on the court, particularly in the second quarter for a long stretch there. That lead stretched for the Bucks, and it was really very frustrating to watch because they're bad in the second quarter. You know, Tatum goes to the line, 1-for-2 from the free throw line. Jaylen Brown goes to the line, 1-for-2. Like, little moments like that, you need those buckets. You need to make those free throws. And it was incredibly frustrating to watch. Marcus Smart goes to the line, misses 2-of-3. He made a smart play to get to the line and have 3 shots, and he missed 2-of-3. So little moments like that, particularly in the second quarter, that were incredibly frustrating. The calls were obviously frustrating across the board. A Grant Williams phantom call. He didn't even touch the guy in the city.
Oh,
got him on the elbow.
Absolute joke.
And then at the end of the game, you know, Giannis with the swipe to Tice, which Tice went soccer mode on us and did flop. That was a ridiculous flop on him. But then they go and look at him. It's like, well, it wasn't that. We can't call a foul on that. And then on the other end, should have been a charge. They flipped it to a block.
I mean, what's the rule there?
That should have been a charge.
Okay. Did he have to have his feet established before Giannis took off? I don't know what the rule there is. There was a goaltending they missed, too. The Gordon Hayward layup, I think it was Hayward, the layup was on the rim.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, that was a missed call, blatant missed call.
Yep. So there was a lot, there was really bad officiating. The officiating was the worst part. But the reason they lost the game is because Jason Tatum was 2-for-18 from the floor. He was atrocious last night on the offensive end. He made a couple of really good plays defensively, but offensively, he was awful. Absolutely awful.
Okay. So I'm going to just say this to piggyback off of your point. You know what doesn't make me feel good at all, really? Everybody that I see tweeting or saying, hey, maybe you're in this category. The Celtics were right there to win that game despite Jason Tatum being 2-for-18. That doesn't make me feel
better.
He sucked. He sucked, and I'll get to him in a second. But just because he was 2-for-18 and you almost won, that doesn't make me feel any better, okay? Because next time you play that game, somebody else will suck. So maybe Tatum has a better game, but then somebody else sucks. Or Chris Middleton might not go 6-for-20. You know, things will change. The dynamic will be totally different. He sucked in that game, and that is the most annoying thing. Now, let's talk about how some of the – where did my piece of paper go? I think I left it out there. Doesn't matter. The other thing about that game and Jason Tatum, now look, it was one game, so I'm not going to get too upset, but I'm going to point out, go look around the league at all the other superstars that played in their first game in the bubble, okay? They all seemingly showed up to play. Now, LeBron James went for 16 and 11. Not a great game, but the Lakers won. Anthony Davis, superstar, 34 points. How many points did James Harden have last night? 49.
Yeah.
Russ Westbrook, 31. Luka Doncic had 28 and a triple-double. Porzingis had 39. I mean, the list goes on and on. Jason Tatum, again, one game, but if he's going to be a superstar, when you're playing the Bucks in a big game, the first game back, you simply can't have that type of off night in that spot. You have to be better than that. And it was an unacceptable performance. And, you know, I just, it makes me sick. Again, it was one game. I'm not going to get on him. I'm not down on him or anything like that. I don't think he's going to suck. I'm not worried. There's none of that. But it was that's a disappointing performance when you can't find any rhythm at all throughout the entire game. And then you lose like the way you did by 4 points or whatever it was right at the end there. You were right there at the last minute of the fourth quarter, and you can't win. He's your big time. He's your guy, okay? That's your guy. You can't be 2-for-18. You have to find some way to contribute, even in the fourth quarter. If you suck the whole game, find a way in the fourth quarter. And the other thing he did, too, I know his defense wasn't bad. I did not like right before the smart block charge or whatever, when he dove at the ball at Giannis out beyond the three-point line. You allowed him to get by you and get ahead of steam.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are you diving at the ball there? Unless you just figure, no matter what, he's going to blow by me. I would have backed off, let him shoot. Give him the open three. He's been dominating in the paint. That's what he does. You try to go for the steal there in an awkward way, and then he has an open run at the basket. I did not like that decision late in the game.
Yeah, there were some bad decisions by him on that game. That is one of them. I mean, it's obvious what you have to do to Giannis. You have to make him a shooter. There's a couple of guys in the NBA where you know exactly what you have to do and not let them get to the rim. Giannis, Ben Simmons, two of those guys.
Correct.
Giannis is a better outside shooter than Ben Simmons is because he's horrible.
Giannis is better.
He's much better. But you know what you have to do. Make him a perimeter shooter. And obviously it's much easier said than done. But how you make those decisions along the way to ensure that fact is important. And Jason Tatum just, I don't know what he was thinking in that moment. I think he was trying to go for the steal and trying to make a big play defensively because he was terrible offensively. But regardless, that's a bad decision to make.
Decision
to make.
You had I forget if the clock was winding down, but he was all the way out there. You know, he had no path to the rim. You back off him. He was even beyond the three-point line.
Make him beat you.
Make him.
From out there.
Yes.
Make him beat you from outside.
Dare him to shoot in that spot, especially. And obviously that call changed the game because it would have been Celtics ball tie game. Instead, the Bucks were up two. And Giannis would have been out of the game. So that was a huge call. Look, Brad Stevens said after the game that he's more encouraged than discouraged. I don't disagree. Again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm being overly negative. I just, look, I've been saying all along the Celtics can play with the Bucks. That was proven last night.
Okay,
so what
are we encouraged about? What are we encouraged about after that game? You agree with Brad Stevens. What are you encouraged about seeing after that game? Because I got a couple of things that I can look at and I'm like, okay, that's a good sign.
Well, I thought Gordon Hayward looked really good.
Yep.
So I thought that was number one. I think Marcus Smart, and this isn't something that we didn't know, but I think that we need to start thinking of him as a different offensive player. I mean, that's an offensive player. 7-for-11, 3-of-6 behind the arc. He is an offensive weapon now. So I was reminded of that last night. I thought they played in big spots, in moments. They played pretty good defense. So there were things that I was encouraged by. Kemba Walker looked good.
Yeah.
You know, I was encouraged by when he was out there. Now, he had a big wrap on his knee. But those things encouraged me. You know, if Walker had been a little bit more, you know, prevalent in terms of minutes, I think that would have helped.
Obviously, there's a minute restriction on him. He only played, I think it was 19 total minutes last night, but he was really effective when he was in there, and it was frustrating not having him out there at crunch time.
But let me just say one more thing.
Yeah.
I was encouraged to kind of not counter what I just said. I was encouraged that they were right there to win the game with Tatum sucking.
Yeah.
But it just, to me, doesn't mean that, oh, if Tatum plays a little better than that next time, which everyone expects, they're going to win. That is not what it means. However, I am encouraged that they lost slightly with Tatum sucking. That's encouraging. It just doesn't mean they're going to win the next time if he plays better. And that's kind of what everybody's been saying.
Well, let's...
What were you encouraged by?
I was encouraged by the couple of things you mentioned. Hayward, offensively, doing what he needed to do. I was encouraged by Kemba looking good, at least on the court. It is frustrating with minutes restriction. But I was encouraged by someone like Brad Wanamaker, who you're going to need to be an important piece of your team as you make your way through the playoffs, because you don't have much depth. You really don't have much depth, and you're going to need him to be an effective player, especially if Kemba Walker is going to be on a minutes restriction for the rest of whatever the regular season is, for the next 7 games.
Let me ask you another question. During your opening take, you alluded to me being when the Celtics went small.
Yeah.
What were you referring to? What did you think I was thinking?
Well, last week we've consistently had this argument time and time again with regards to Taco Fall. Mm-hmm. And I figured watching that game, seeing with the ease at some points that Giannis can get to the rim, I was thinking, oh, Mark wishes there's just a big body to get in his way right now.
That's correct. Now, I understand against a team like the Bucks, you know, if you have Fall in there and he's on, say, Brook Lopez, Lopez can shoot threes.
Yeah.
But the question becomes, what would you rather do or deal with? Brook Lopez shooting threes or Giannis, their best player, having his absolute way at the rim? So I think that's a question that you could ask. The answer? Let the basketball people figure it out. But you're right. If you had Taco in there, there is no doubt it would not be as easy for Giannis at the rim. It just wouldn't be as easy. I'm not saying Taco shuts him down or this or that. It just would not be as easy. You'd be leaving Lopez open probably more often for threes, but what's his career percentage? Would you rather take your chances with Lopez jacking up three after three or Giannis having his way every time he goes to the cup? That's the question.
Well, there's an obvious answer to that. You'd rather have Lopez out behind the arc.
So then why isn't Taco Fall in the game?
Well, at that point when they went small, did they need it? No, because they actually climbed back into the game.
They did climb back in the game,
they
right.
They played very well when they were playing small. They right. made it. The defensive switches were really, really good. And that's part of the problem with Taco is you can't switch with him as easily as you would like to. You just can't. It's hard for him to do that and move laterally like that. But there were some encouraging signs. Like we said, there were some encouraging signs. But let's not forget, as you mentioned, just because Tatum will have a better game next time they play, don't forget who's going to be back for them too, for the Bucks. Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah.
And Bledsoe's an important piece to what they do. He's a good defensive player. He can go off offensively sometimes. So it's not going to get easier next time just because Jason Tatum played well or will play well.
I mean, a lot of these games with the Bucks, and there's not a huge sample size this year, but it feels like, you know, both teams pretty evenly matched, and it comes down to the fact that they have the superstar and you don't.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like it comes down to a lot of the times. It's just, they have the slight advantage because they have the alpha player.
The Tatum poor play was amplified during that game because they kept going to the, look what he did in February. He was leading the league in scoring in February. Look at all these other guys that he was beating and scoring, and he was playing all, you know, he's proven that he really is an all-star. And then that's months and months and months ago. Doesn't relate to what's going on right now. And he's not quite there yet. He's going to be a superstar in this league, but he needs to be more consistent. Look, you mentioned some of the other superstars in the league. What did they do? for the most part, they had really good games.
Really good games. Kawhi Leonard, 28 points. Paul George, 30 points. Even Ja Morant, 22 points. Damian Lillard, 29 points. The only guy that really kind of disappointed was Zion with 13 points. He was minus 16.
Yeah, he was limited. You know, again, that's another – he was limited to 20 minutes.
Right. So, I mean
– and they're not playing him
again,
at the end of quarters.
See, but when you're Jason Tatum, it's just – that's a spot you can't – if you're a superstar, it's unacceptable to be that bad in that spot. I'm sorry. It's a high bar. But if you're a superstar, that's the way it is. That's life.
And you know what else you've done? You've opened yourself up to criticism. But some of the things you had said in the past with regards to, I don't have a hoop. And then you're hearing reports, he's just golfing. That's all he's doing. You're opening yourself up to the criticism that you're not doing.
You got to play well.
Hey,
Jordan would go golfing before playoff games, but then he'd drop 49.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Look at what we did with Brady. Almost 20 years of near perfection. And we were killing him for not showing
up
to OTAs.
I want to stress, I'm not starting this train. I'm not crushing Jason Tatum. I'm just, by Sunday, it'll be anew, and I will be fresh as a daisy. And I'll be ready to watch the Celtics, and I'll be expecting the best out of Jason Tatum, and I'll have a smile on my face. I'm just saying, last night, big spot, restart, game one, Bucks.
National television.
National TV, you've got to be better. A superstar has to be better than 2 for 18.
Yeah.
And it just... you watched him too. It was the eye test was disgusting. I mean, he was a mess. Runners in the lane, floaters, clang. I mean,
It was brutal. What did you think of the presentation of the game?
I'm glad you brought that up. I really liked it. And I watched that game like it was an NBA game. It did not occur to me at all. I was into it. I watched it. I felt the vibe of the game, you know, the ambiance, whatever you want to call it. I felt it. And it did not affect me whatsoever that they were in some bubble in a hotel in Florida or wherever they are. I loved it. And it was normal to me. That was a great sign.
Yeah, I thought it actually came off really well.
Yeah.
You know, when I was looking at when the Red Sox start at Fenway, it doesn't look right. All the empty stands. It just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
You go to New York, take on the Mets. It actually looked better. It felt better. Did it not?
Yeah, I mean,
even just having cardboard cutouts, just the optics of it looks better than empty seats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it feels realer.
Yeah, I can get on board. Like, it's not going to bother me.
Yeah, I liked the presentation of the NBA. I didn't mind the virtual fans there. They're probably a little too big, maybe a hair distracting. But overall, I thought it looked really good. It looked fun. It kind of looked like you were playing 2K. You know what I mean? It looked like you were playing the video game. I thought they pulled it off really well. I thought the presentation of that game, the sound, everything was really good. And it was very encouraging for what they're trying to do with the NBA right now in the bubble.
Yeah, maybe it was a TV thing. But overall, it felt like a regular season game, a big regular season game. And I forgot about the whole situation. I forgot they were in the bubble. I didn't think about that. Hey, they're not any fans. You know, they're not in Boston. They're not in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I was into the game. It was a big game, and I was into it. Every time Giannis scored, they had the big thing come up on the screen there, Giannis flexing. Like, I thought it was a pretty well-done presentation. And the most important thing is that it didn't feel to me like a summer league game or something like that, where it's just like, what is this? I was into it, and I totally forgot they were in a bubble in a hotel in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to be into it regardless, even if it looked like it was just a pickup game. I was going to be into it regardless.
Well, you were going to be into it, but you would have felt the difference if it really was lousy.
There would have been a disconnect there, looming over the shroud of the actual game itself. There would have been a disconnect, but I wouldn't have really cared all that much. But having said that, I think the NBA did a really good job with the presentation of it, how it looks, how they set it up there at Disney. It looked good. It felt good. It felt like real basketball. It really did.
Yeah.
And kudos to them, because I thought it was a good product.
So if that's the case for a regular season game, I expect the playoffs to be no different. I know, again, the NBA Finals, it's a different situation, but this... that was a great start from a viewer's perspective, I thought.
Yeah.
So I'm all in on this. Not that, again, I wouldn't have been, but I am all in after what we saw. 401-737-1287 is the phone number, 37937. You can text us. The Red Sox, you know, it's disappointing. I'm disappointed in a few different things in terms of the Boston Red Sox, Major League Baseball. Also, real quick, before we get into the Red Sox, Rob Manfred, I guess, sent a memo to the MLBPA that they could be looking at shutting down the season as early as Monday. Does that concern you at all?
Yeah, of course it does. It should concern you. Because I think the owners didn't really want to do this, right? I think the owners were okay if the season went away. And if they're going to push Manfred to say, hey, they're making this worse, the players are making this worse, we can hang it on them, they're the reason why the season is going to end, I'm frustrated by it. It's incredibly frustrating because clearly they were short-sighted in how they had their protocols set up for this.
Well, you know, I blame in part the MLBPA. See, here's the problem.
I do too.
Well, the thing is, they didn't want to be away from their families. They didn't want the bubble in Arizona. But now what are we doing? You know, now guys aren't behaving properly outside of the clubhouse, off the field, and they're putting themselves at risk, and that puts their families at risk. So you could argue that the families would have been in a better situation had they been in the bubble.
Yeah.
They would have been safer. I know you would have been apart, and that sucks. But you would have been safer. And I, you know, when I read this, I'm starting to think, is the bubble the only way? It's early. And I'm thinking about football. Football doesn't have as much travel night in and night out, week in and week out as baseball does. So that will help. But there's no bubble. There's not going to be a bubble in football. What's going to happen there?
No, you should be concerned.
I am.
You should be very concerned. You see what happens. It's not like it's one or two players. You're seeing, what, 18, 19 on the Marlins? Testing positive in a week?
Yeah.
Like, that's very concerning, especially with football, a game that's far more physical, far more face-to-face, confrontational. You're much closer to each other. You're breathing heavily onto each other far more consistently than you are in baseball, certainly. And it's about trust of the players. And they're already breaking that trust. I mean, granted, that's the NBA with Lou Williams, you know, breaking that, going to the strip club just to get wings because he's bringing that back because that's what... Whatever. I don't know.
Well, listen, sometimes, I mean, when I lived in Mississippi, the best wings you could buy at a gas station. They had the best wings.
Really?
So it's just not, I mean, there could be the best wings in Atlanta in a strip club.
Maybe they are.
Yeah.
Maybe they are. But you couldn't have just had your friend go in?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Just, come on.
Okay.
You're 6'4". You already stand out. You know what I mean? Like, send someone else in there just to get it. But it shows that they're not. Some people are not taking it seriously enough. And then you take that situation and magnify it or multiply it because it's the NFL and you have so many more players at your disposal on your team. There's more going to go wrong here. There's more that is going to go wrong. And I'm concerned about the NFL. If Major League Baseball ends up shutting down this season, I am very, very concerned that the NFL either won't start on time, won't play at all, or won't be able to finish.
Well, the SEC already pushed back the start of their schedule, their season, to, what was it, September 26th, 29th, something like that. So that's going to be, you know, it's already starting. I'd be really surprised if the NFL didn't play because they want to play. They want the TV money. They want those things. They got to find a way to play if they're the NFL. But, yeah, that doesn't – it's not a good prognostic. I mean, it doesn't look – it's not a good situation. Text, hey, guys, lighten up. Tatum only had one bad game after being – off for over 4 months. Is it really necessary to fall back on the gloom and doom angle?
Well, it's not gloom and doom. It's frustration.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Again, I just said, I'm not nervous about Tatum. I don't think it's going to ruin their season, their chances. It's just in that one game, in that one spot, it was a frustrating performance. And when you're a superstar, you get held to a higher standard.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about it if you go 2-for-18.
When we're not watching other superstars in the league
start slow,
have rust.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of rust. Yeah. And it's frustrating. Of course, hey, they just played. We finally get to talk about them. We're going to criticize them when we see it.
Yeah.
We also praise them on other things. I mean, geez, I just praise Brad Wanamaker for being an encouraging sign. Yeah. On the flip side of that, I'm going to take some issue with how Tatum played last night. That's what we do.
I mean, at one point, I was sort of hoping that they passed the ball to Yab. I mean, who was it? Semi-Ojeley, then Tate. I mean, I was lost with Jason Tatum. He couldn't do anything right.
Yeah.
I mean, every shot was off. It wasn't even close. All right. Let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk to Dan and Cranston. I want to get into the Red Sox and the Patriots as well. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEI.
Sports Radio, 103.7. It's Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 401-737-1287. Let's talk to Dan in Cranston. Dan, good morning. How's it going?
Oops, sorry. My wife was texting me.
No, that's fine. That's
dare
cool.
She.
Exactly. Hey, real quick. I said a couple of these things on the other show, and but it's germane to what you're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
One thing real quick. Out of the sports that I've seen, and maybe just because it's the ice level that makes a difference and not really any fans you really pay attention to, hockey looks almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We knew it would.
Yeah. And I think, yeah. So Dana White said this week, bubble, you're in. Non-bubble, you're out, in terms of making it work. And, you know, everyone is saying, you know, the protocols that the league set up and everything, and I think that's misguided because the thing that's going to bring the NFL and the MLB down, which the MLB is already down for the count, is the behavior outside of the bubble. You know, there is no bubble in society. That's where everything's going to go wrong. Because you keep seeing pictures, you know, I think it was the Rays that were in Atlanta going out to bars, they're going out to strip clubs, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, you're talking about, just think of the average NFL player who's, what, 20-something. You really think they're going to stay in their homes for 4 months during the season?
No.
That's my point, and that's where it's all going to go wrong, because you can do everything you want while they're there, and they can, comply with everything. It's just when they go home, their families and the people that they're interacting with, it's just inevitable that COVID's going to get to these people, and then they're just going to bring it back into the clubhouse or the locker rooms, wherever they're going. And testing, unless you have point of care, rapid, like 15-minute test, this stuff, even waiting like 2 days isn't going to do it.
It's too long.
It's stupid. Wait, it's just.
And to your point, it's why I worry about the NFL the most. Typically, from everything I've heard, baseball players are the craziest of the crazy when it comes to professional athletes. They're wild. They're
on the road the most.
They're on the road so much. But why I'm not so worried about their behavior outside of the norm right now is that they're playing every night, so there's this routine that comes into play. But with football, Monday through Friday, whatever, you can kind of do whatever you want during the night. Without much accountability, there's not a game to at least keep you somewhat accountable.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah, so I think the other thing that was alarming was how fast this Miami Marlins outbreak occurred. It was within a week, and there was an outbreak.
Part of the problem is we don't know where they contracted it from.
I know.
Was it the flight attendant? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We don't know.
That's a problem.
Yes,
it doesn't
absolutely.
Really matter. It
and
happened.
That goes to Dan's point with regards to Dana White, why the bubble works versus non-bubble.
I'm with him. I think I'm with him.
It's limiting interactions as much as possible.
Go ahead, Dan.
To me, it's not if this happens with football. It's when it happens. We'll just do the Marlins scenario, okay? And they basically couldn't field the team, which is what I've been saying all along. It's going to break out so much, you're going to lose basically, three-quarters of your team. You can't even play. Now, the thing with baseball is, sure, we can do doubleheaders or, make it up. You can't do that in football. It's not like we're going to say we're going to play a doubleheader in football or we're going to have set aside 3 more weeks to make up games. It's not going to work. They either have to cut the number of games, and then there's so many competitive disadvantages in football more than any other sport, too, because if you literally lose your whole offensive line, I mean, you're going to put your quarterback to get killed with a bunch of scrubs.
Yeah.
It's just, I love football more than anything in the world, but I'm really, really glad that, A, we have golf. Sorry, Ben.
long as you've got something, Dan, I'm happy.
But when all this goes to crap, which it's going to go to crap, the basketball and hockey will still be in full gear to what, maybe October or November, whatever they were talking about.
Yeah.
And, we'll have something to turn to, because when football crashes and burns, it's going to, we'll have something. I just have less than zero confidence that they're going to be able to do it. So.
All right.
Have a good day, guys. Take care.
So in one phone call, Dan disregarded a text from his wife and then said, I love football more than anything in the world.
Yeah.
Noted.
The text was, she was filing divorce papers. That was the text.
This is what we were talking about last week, though, about the NFL season. Because we were wondering, you were saying about, will it be a legitimate season because I'm not sure they're going to be able to finish the season. And they'll have however many games, 12 games, 10 games. But I was saying, we were talking about are you going to have the players there? Because like Dan said, you can't make up these games very easily. Are you going to have an instance where half the team, half the offense, your quarterback is down because of COVID for multiple weeks, multiple games? That's a problem. That would also illegitimize the season. Let's talk to Mike in North Providence on the Celtics. Mike, good morning.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, Tatum actually had a 1-for-18 game at the beginning of the season, too. You know, I mean, it's, I guess he may be just a slow starter, you know, so I'm not really too worried about it. I was more encouraged by what I saw out of the bench.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A lot of flack.
Yeah, but we're not worried about it, Mike. We just, it was a frustrating scene to see him play like that when the game was there to be won and when Giannis is going off and it was, you know, they hadn't played in months and you're excited. It was just frustrating.
What really frustrates me is, you know, with Jaylen Brown having a good game with Gordon Hayward having a good game.
Hey, Mike, call us back because that sound was intolerable.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. Mike, give us a call back. That was very bizarre. Sound like,
well, yeah,
a
balloon, he was saying
losing
about
air.
Gordon Hayward having a good game. That's what we were saying. Hayward was really good. There were a lot of aspects to that game where guys performed.
Marcus Smart was fantastic.
You'd like to put, 7-for-11. You'd like to put the cherry on top with a win. You know, it's just, that's the way this series is. I expect a 7-game series if they play. I think it will be neck and neck. But again, when they have the superstar, they have the edge. And when the teams are close, and I have to start, I'll admit, I have to start giving the Bucks more credit. They're not filled with they have, what's his name? Chris Middleton's an all-star. So they're not filled with these elite-level talents. But they're really well-constructed. They complement each other very well. They play well
and
together.
And they scheme well.
And they have a good scheme. So I need to start giving them more credit.
Sure
than
do.
I have been. So that's something that I'm willing to admit. But I still think the Celtics are right there. I still think the Celtics can beat them, can make them, you know, put them on the brink maybe. But I wouldn't pick the Celtics to beat them in a series at this point. But I don't think it couldn't happen. You know, if Tatum, somebody would have to go nuclear possibly. You'd have to go to a level you haven't been at in a while or forever. But the Celtics could be right there to beat them in a series. It could happen. It's not impossible. It's not the Nets and Celtics from 2002.
No, it's not impossible. But keep in mind when we're talking about the Bledsoe didn't play for them. And he's a good player.
Yeah.
He's particularly a defensive player. He's good. He's a quality player. So when you're looking at that and going, man, they were right there, even with the Celtics' best player not playing well, don't forget, they were missing their third best player, the Bucks. So keep that in mind when you're looking at and trying to prognosticate it further towards the playoffs and a potential 7-game series. Yeah, but they can hang with them. They're not so far off that it's you put them in a series against the Buccaneers, the Bucks, and you're like, yeah, it's a sweeper, gentleman sweep, just like it was last year.
Yeah.
No. They are closer than they definitely were last year. They are
a
better
team. They can play with them. They can beat them. It'll take a special effort.
They can play with anyone in the East. They could beat anyone in the East, which is why a lot of people predicted them to come out of the East and represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. There's a reason why people like Jalen Rose were saying that. It's because they have plenty of talent. The bench isn't great, and obviously that gets shortened when you come to the playoffs, but there were encouraging signs there. Wanamaker was very encouraging with how he played when you had limited time from your starting point guard and arguably one of your best players in Kemba Walker. Your first or second best player in Kemba Walker. So there's definitely signs there you can look at and go, yeah, this team could beat the Bucks in a 7-game series.
But didn't you even...
Cream City.
Yeah. Didn't you get a sense in the first two nights of NBA basketball that it came back that this is sort of what we expected last summer when all these free agents sort of teamed up in pairs on these different teams? I mean, I look around the league after the last two nights, and it feels like 5-6 teams could win the championship. All of a sudden, the Rockets look like a threat. The Clippers are right there with the Lakers. The Lakers are obviously really good. The Bucks look really good. I mean, the Celtics were right there with the Bucks. You could make an argument. This is what we hoped for.
No, this
is what we wanted.
This is exactly what we wanted. We wanted a a spread of competitiveness. We didn't want just, like, listen, it was kind of nice having the Warriors be there year in and year out for a few years.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice, but it wore on you at the end. You're like, all right, enough. Yeah. Enough is enough. If they can do it without KD and going back to their previous core, that's going to be a special story in itself. But it's nice having three teams in the West, two or three potential teams in the East that you're like, any one of these could win the championship right now.
You still can't disregard the Raptors, who won the title last year. They're Pascal good. Siakam, he's really emerged.
That is
an all-star.
Well-constructed team.
Yeah, their coach knows what he's doing, obviously. So there are, and then Philly. Philly feels like a wild card still. You don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
I would love to see, go check those standings right now. I believe 2-3 right now, Toronto, Boston. If I would love to see Philly play Milwaukee, that would be a good series for me. I would love to see those two teams tango. You know, see Embiid go up against Giannis and have them battle in the paint and all those types of things. That'd be a really intriguing matchup, and I don't want to have the Celtics play both of those teams. All right, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get to the Red Sox, who played in New York last night against the Yankees. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEI.
It's Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 401-737-1287. Mike, if you're out there, you can call back. Just that sound in the phone was annoying. Okay, let's talk about the Red Sox. They lost last night to the Yankees. This dude, Ryan Weber, okay? Where, you know, 11 ERA, in two starts, he has not struck out one man. How does this man make major leagues? How does he get to the show, baby? You know, this is the ultimate dream. And these, you know, player after player, these unbelievable talents can't get there. I mean, how many top picks have the Red Sox spent over the last few years on pitching?
I honestly have no idea. I don't pay too close attention to
that kid,
MLB
Bloom
track.
Or something? His name was Bloom. Maybe I'm thinking of another kid.
Thinking of Chaim Bloom?
No, I'm thinking of somebody else. He was in Lowell.
Groom? G-R-O-O-M-E?
Groom. That was his name.
Jason Groom?
Where is he?
I think that's his name.
Why can't that guy, the first round pick, come up and do something? Who is Ryan Weber? And
yeah,
how about
you,
Matt
you
Hall?
Know,
you tell me about Matt Hall.
No,
who's Matt Hall?
I can't. He's one of the kids in the hall. I don't know. I don't know who these guys are, but with regards to Groom, you know, they look at these things like service time. They want to push back as far as they can to pay you the big money as possible, and that's what happens. I think they're looking at this year as a quote bridge year. It's a bridge for them.
But it's
a bridge.
If they
can be competitive enough, cool. If they're terrible, okay, that's fine too, because we're going to get a top draft pick. We haven't had one of these in a long time, and we need to refresh the farm system. Plus, as Tom Warner said on OMF a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, we just want to make sure we get to through August 31st. Because we want to make sure that luxury tax resets for us for next year so we can go spend again. They need to do that. And they can't keep spending this year to make that happen. If they spent too much this year on pitching, then they weren't going to be able to reset the luxury tax, and they weren't going to be able to spend nearly as much as they want to next year, the year after, and the year beyond that. And you're going to have guys coming up that you're going to need to figure out what to do with them. You only have one guy that you're sitting there going, he's locked up for a long time. We know he's going to be here, and that's Xander Bogaerts. You're going to have to figure out what you're going to do with Christian Vasquez, who, by the way, looks pretty damn good.
Pudge Rodriguez to this point.
Absolutely. You're going to have to pay Devers at some point.
Okay, speaking of Raffy, my man. Okay, listen,
brutal.
Here's the thing. This team needed their offense to perform because that was the strength. That was what you had. You had Devers, you had Bogaerts, you had Martinez. Now, Bogaerts has been all right. You know, he had a couple hits last night. Outside of the first two games, J.D. Martinez, what has he really done? And Devers has been a disaster. I don't care. He's got a couple doubles, whatever. He's 5-for-29 with zero home runs and zero RBIs.
Well, as bad as he's been, there's someone that's been much worse
than
him.
And the guy you're going to mention is just the arrow is so far down, it hurts my feet. Go.
Andrew Benintendi.
He's been awful. Go look at the stats from the last 3 years. It's just this downward trend that'll give you a toothache. I mean, it's terrible. And he, unfortunately, was supposed to be one of the centerpieces, you know? A centerpiece to your offense. And that's not that he's turning into an average player. That's what he is right now. He's below average right now.
Making JBJ look like a god right now.
I mean, when was the last time he hit a home run? Andrew Benintendi. I mean, he has been, he's not even batting 100.
It's been a calendar year, I think, close, right?
He had 20 home runs and 90 RBIs in 2017, I believe, and that is the guy I could sign up for.
Yeah.
Okay?
And the year after, 16 home runs, 87 RBI, a couple less games, hit 290.
But like, then what about in 2019? That was an alarming year.
Yeah, he was garbage. Played 10 less games, 13 home runs, 68 RBI, yeah. 266 batting average. The arrow has been trending down for him. But the good side of that is you've picked up someone who looks like he's got at least some life to him and actually plays hard in Verdugo.
Yeah, I mean, life is nice. Hard is nice, but you got to produce.
Well, he's producing a hell of a lot more than Benintendi is.
Right. I'll defend Benintendi here. I don't like the fact that he's bounced around the lineup. That guy is not a leadoff hitter.
No.
You know, that's not a leadoff hitter. I don't know why you put him there. I haven't garnered any information telling me that he's comfortable batting there. It's not working. Find a spot. Put him down at eight. I mean, he's not hitting. He's sucking.
You know, they got to get over the right, left, right, left, right, left. You know. Just put the best players in the best position to succeed. If it's Pilar is leading off, then have Pilar be your leadoff guy. And say, Xander, suck it up. We need you to bat second.
Yeah.
We need you. That's the most effective way for us to win games is for you to be batting second. Suck it up.
Yeah.
Because you're not a four.
Yeah. No, he's not a four. But if he's hitting, you know, that's better than having somebody that's just, what are you going to put, Christian Vasquez at four? I guess you could right now.
No, you're going to put him in five.
I guess.
Let J.D. Martinez rack up some doubles and see if Vasquez can clean him up.
Okay. Well, here, just one other thing, too, that annoys me, okay? Because on Friday night, Mookie Betts made a great throw. He gunned out a guy at third base. Now, it was an awesome throw, Ichiro-esque.
Yeah, it was.
But now I'm hearing all these things. Oh, I'll just see what Mookie did last night. I mean, that hurts. The Dodgers, Mookie, blah, blah, blah. Listen, Mookie was here, available to do those things all last year. And the Red Sox were in last place. It was a disaster. Okay, so let's not forget that. I know Mookie's in the blue uniform now and it hurts and all these things. He was here last year and the Red Sox sucked. Mookie would not be rescuing this situation, especially with the way he's been hitting out there. He's batting about 250. Now, he'll figure it out.
He had a home run last night.
Okay, but they lost. He is not he would not be the savior in this situation. The pitching could barely perform in the Cape League for the Red Sox. That's the problem, and we knew it. We knew it.
Listen, offense isn't the problem. I mean, even with Benintendi hitting 090, it offense still isn't really overall the problem. It's the pitching staff, particularly the starting pitching. When you have one guy that you're looking at, you can rely on one and a half guys. Perez, you're going to get a good night, and then you might get a bad night. You don't know. Evaldi, through the two starts, consistent, kept you in the game. Other than that, you have no hope with anybody. You've got, what, four pitchers? And your entire pitching staff, not your starting rotation, in your entire pitching staff that you're like, okay, I feel kind of comfortable with all of them, but in reality, none of them are great. None of them are great.
The offense has
Workman's nice. Barnes is a little inconsistent, but he can be
fine. He's stressful.
Yeah, they're all
stressful. He walks too many guys.
Yes. They have no pitching.
The base running hasn't been good. I mean, the manager is – I don't know if the manager is even – does he even want to be a manager? I mean, the manager has been bad. The base running has been bad. The offense has been bad. The pitching has been abysmal.
Defense at moments has been really bad.
See, the thing is, like, Devers needs to be better. It's sort of Jason Tatum-esque from last night. You know, but this has been over a larger sample size. He has to be better. You can't, that's your guy. You know, 32 home runs last year, I think. 100-plus RBI. You can't start the year 5-for-29 with zero RBIs.
You can't strike out 9 times and have 1 walk.
Correct.
You can't
unacceptable
do that.
Splits. You've got to be better. And he's come up. I mean, there were a few at-bats there. You know what? Just another at-bat. You could go a million examples a million different ways. The other night against the Mets. And give the Red Sox credit. They found a way to beat. I mean, they didn't beat Jacob DeGrom, but they won the game when DeGrom started. So that's a good win. But Devers, right, comes up. I think it was a tie game. Base is loaded, okay, and the first pitch he sees down the pipe, and he takes it.
Yeah.
And you said right there, the guy's not ready to hit. And then he ended up swinging at every pitch thereafter and ended up swinging at a ball and struck out. I mean, he just you have to find a way to be better, Devers.
Well, that approach has never made sense to me. Watch the first pitch.
Yeah.
Because if I'm a pitcher, I'm going, okay, all these guys are just going to watch the first pitch. I'm just going to get a strike on them every time. I'm just going to throw a groove a fastball, get a strike, start up.
Yeah, but
by the time they want to move the bat.
It's also a symptom of a guy who's not ready to hit. You know, he's ready to, he's just uncomfortable and he's hoping that maybe he can get into an advantageous count. That's not a guy ready to hit with the bases loaded in the eighth inning or ninth inning of a tie game. Be ready to hit.
While he's frustrating, I'm still not worried about him yet.
No. The greats turn it around.
Benintendi, I'm worried about.
Benintendi, I don't think is a great. So him turning it around, especially when you look at the last 3 years and those progressions, yeah, that's worrisome.
Yeah, I'm worried about him being an effective player for the next couple of years for the Red Sox. I just think he's going to be kind of an average player at best. Might pop off with a couple of home runs, but ever since he decided to be Benny Biceps, his power's been gone.
Well, this year he supposedly lost some weight. And he's trying to, I don't know, trim down and have a better, more elastic swing. Whatever it is, it's not working. Okay? 20 and 90 was where I was hoping he would live. Even the year after that, he batted like, what, 290? So I could live with that.
Well, yeah.
In 2018, he was 290.
Yeah, you're fine with him hitting 290. You're fine with him.
Yeah, even if the home run numbers aren't as high. But you can't have him... I mean, just a black hole. You can't have that.
No, especially if you're going to consistently use him as your leadoff guy, which I don't think you're going to do much moving forward. Can't have that there.
Let's talk to Ralph and Cranston. Ralph, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
You know, I hear Mookie Betts every now and then. You know, Mookie Betts had every intangible you want except for that last one if you were going to pay him to be the most expensive player. He had to bleed red, kind of like Yastrzemski, Fisk, Ortiz. These guys were Red Sox. They wanted to be Red Sox. They wanted to come and they wanted to stay. See, he didn't have that. That's why you were taking a risk 12 years paying him that kind of money. He was a little bit like Greenwell. He plays the sport, likes baseball, but he really isn't, you know, that leader that you really, because he didn't want to be. Now, Devers is a funny thing, guys, and I've been beating this up for a couple of years. I saw him at Pawtucket. I don't know if we've discussed it with you. I saw him make four errors when I first saw him, and this guy just is not a third baseman. Even when he's in shape, he's not a third baseman. Mm-hmm. And he's, last year, he sucked. He was, like, last in the league with, like, runs saved or something like that. This guy is just not going to be a long-term. He doesn't even have the body for it. I don't know why they didn't try him at first or whatever.
No, but if he hits 35 home runs and bats in 120 runs, I mean, that will be some of the third baseman blunders will be forgiven.
But he still can do that somewhere else. To me, he seems like a natural first baseman because he scoops balls up pretty good. His throwing is horrible. I just think he fits much better. And I really don't think his body is, you know, you guys don't go as far back as I do with some of these heavier players from years ago. In the 60s, you had Mickey Lolich. Tried losing weight.
Remember Cecil Fielder?
Yeah, remember Fielder. Some guys just play better at a heavier weight. And I wouldn't want to see him spelt, so to speak, because it might hurt his power. I like Chavis at the top of that lineup. I think they should try him at the top of the lineup. I totally agree with whoever said Bogaerts second. I'd like to see Chavis, Bogaerts, Devers and Martinez as your top four. This team has got lousy pitching. And let's face it, they have to hit home runs and play good defense. That's why I don't like Devers, especially at third. He's going to make a ton of errors. Look, this is a transition year. Anybody that takes this year too serious is fooling themselves. They look horrible. They really do. Their pitching is... And, you know, I really believe in Bloom. I think Bloom is the perfect person to bring in. They've been just uselessly throwing money around like it's worthless. And that put them in the position they were in last year. They didn't make the playoffs, and they had the most expensive team ever. And I really believe in that. That's what I really wanted to see him start shaping this team. And I think he's doing it. But, you know, we've got to find, like you guys said, and I'll tell you, Renicky is already not my man. I don't really like Renicky. I don't think he's long-term. I don't think
he's definitely
long-term. I think you also kind of went from a younger, more excitable guy, energetic guy in Alex Cora to an older man in Ron Renicky. And that can kind of be, I don't know, a downer within the clubhouse?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah, you got a culture shock there in that clubhouse now.
Yeah, absolutely. To Ralph's point, though, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have speculated Devers is going to be a first baseman. That's probably your future at that position. But you have other things that you got to figure out there. What do I do with Chavis? Like, can I move him to third? Can he even play that? Because he's at least passable as a first baseman.
He made a great pick last night on that Bogarts play.
So you've got things you got to figure out. You know that Devers at least can be somewhat productive. Offensively, he's a very good third baseman. Defensively, he needs some work. But, yeah, it's kind of a wash when he's putting up that many home runs, he's driving in that many runs, and he's hitting for above 300 average.
Who are you talking about, Devers?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. If he produces offensively, you'll find a spot.
You're kind of okay with that.
Yeah.
You're kind of okay with that at third.
But when he's batting 111 or whatever it is.
172.
Oh. When he's batting less than 200.
Much better. You know, I disagree with his notion that Chavis should be leading off. I think you can't have someone that strikes out that much mm-hmm. as your leadoff guy. The way they've been playing right now, Pilar should be your leadoff guy. That should be your leadoff guy. The way they've been playing, give him a shot at it. Let him see if he can create some noise at the leadoff position. Put Bogarts at two, Devers at three, JD at four. And then you can put Vasquez and Chavis after that, try and get some power in that part of the order. But Chavis, Benintendi, they should not be leading off for you.
All right, let's take a break. When we get back, I want to talk about the Patriots. A lot of opt-outs this past week. A Bill Belichick press conference. We'll get into all that. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.